Hi, welcome to James Miller Lifeology, where you'll learn to simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. My name is James Miller. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and a composer. Thank you so much for joining me today in this podcast. Let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get your free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. I have a great show for you today. I'll be teaching you the importance of self-validating when you're going through a difficult time. I'll also be interviewing Patty Blue Hayes, who's an award-winning author, who shares her story of heartache and how she overcame it. You all know me as a psychotherapist, but many of you do not know me as a composer. My first album, Consolation, was written specifically for people who are experiencing grief and loss. I like to think of this album like a book. Each original composition is written like a chapter in a book. And just like in any story, it goes from the loss that one experiences and eventually helps people find the hope for their future. You may purchase this album on iTunes or through any other digital music store. Be sure to download the digital booklet that comes along with it. The name of the album is Consolation, and my stage name is James S. Miller. The name of the piece you are currently hearing is entitled Temptation. A long time ago, there was a great king who built a beautiful palace. In the palace, there was a hall full of mirrors that covered the floor, walls, and ceiling. The mirrors were so clear and smooth that visitors didn't understand at once that there were multiple mirrors in front of them. So accurately, the mirrors would reflect the objects. Moreover, the walls of this hall were made in a way that they created an increased echo. A cruel servant played a trick on a dog one day and threw him into the hall. The dog froze in surprise as he was suddenly surrounded by a pack of dogs. The dog bared his teeth, and all the reflections responded to it in kind. Frightened, the dog frantically barked. The echo imitated the bark and increased it many times over. The dog barked even louder, and the echo was deafening. The dog tossed from one side to another, biting the air, and the dog surrounding him snapped their teeth as well. In the morning, the cruel servant found the lifeless dog. The dog died by fighting his own reflections. The world doesn't bring good or evil on its own. Everything that happens around you is a reflection of your thoughts, feelings, wishes, and actions. Self-validating during a difficult time. We've talked many times about how life is going to happen to all of us. We have many great, wonderful situations that happen, and often we will have many devastating times in our life as well. When things are going well, it's pretty easy for us to self-affirm or to have a good self-esteem. But what happens when the negative things happen in our life? What are the takeaways that we internalize about ourselves? For example, you go through a really devastating breakup. You lose your job. You are ostracized from your family. Many situations can happen. And one of the difficult things is we will often internalize the actions of the other people to determine our worth. For example, in a breakup, if a person leaves you, all of a sudden you're going to internalize that there is something wrong with you, that you're not lovable, that you deserve to be rejected. Let's say you're ostracized from your family for some reason. You're going to internalize that as you're less than, or there's something wrong with you, or once again, that you're not lovable as well. When anything happens, we have the ability to internalize it to think, the way these people are treating me must be true. This must be how I really am, and I just was fooling myself this whole time. You get fired from a job. Your self-worth is usually wrapped up in your career. And so all of a sudden, when that's gone, then what? And so that's when you have to remind yourself, and that's when you have to create these techniques that we're going to discuss and how you can self-validate during these difficult times. Did you realize that you process positive and negative situations differently? We actually remember the negative much more than we do the positive. Some research has suggested that it's roughly 6 positive situations to counteract 1 negative one. So if you're going through something really difficult or you've heard some negative things about you, it's going to take many positive things to counteract that. The way it works in our brain is when we have a negative event that happens, we will try and think it out. We will try and process it more than a more positive event. We will look at the negative situation from all different angles. We'll analyze it inside and out, try and figure it out in any way we can. But in doing so, it actually solidifies the situation within us. And then whatever we're feeling about ourselves or whatever negative emotions we've slapped on it based off of our perception will all of a sudden become the reality. And that's how we'll have the memories of the event. There was research that was done that had people bring up memories from their past. The majority of the memories that were reported were negative memories. And the reason is because when we create that snapshot in our head as far as what happened, or when we analyze it as much as possible and we put those emotions on it, that then kind of brings us back to that time when we remember it, and then we relive the whole situation again. So in a way, it's kind of re-traumatizing ourselves. So one of the most important things I always tell my clients is when you're going through a negative situation, it's so important to find a perception shift. If you have to talk to someone, if you have to read something, if you have to be around certain people that can give you a slightly different perception of the situation, doesn't mean you believe it. But if you can start to hear something a little bit different or start to believe something different, it starts to create that path of that change in your mind. So therefore, you don't create that snapshot of the emotional trauma you're experiencing. And so you can move on beyond it later on. One of the most important things we have to remember is, and this is kind of a mantra that I teach everybody, is just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something. So you've experienced this really traumatic loss, this traumatic struggle, and all of a sudden you are trying to numb the pain. You're just holding on for dear life to have something make sense. And so in that, we want to, let's say with this breakup that you've gone through, you want to feel connected with someone again. You want to feel loved again. You want to feel a part of something. Or when you're ostracized from your family, you want to be a part of something. You want to be connected again. You lose your job, the same type of thing. You want to refine your identity. And so often we will create our own version of what that looks like, what that feels like, or what that seems like in order to kind of recreate it, even though we know it's not true. And so that can be in self-medicating. If we don't want to feel something, if we want to feel happy again, well, sometimes people will take drugs. Sometimes people will over-medicate. Sometimes people will over-drink, or people will engage in promiscuity. There's so many things we often will try and do to fill that hole of that loss we experience. So remember, just because you can do these things does not mean you should do these things. Because whatever you create now, whatever becomes your go-to now, before these things happen, will become your go-to when the negative situations do happen. And they will happen. That's just life. It's important for you to create these strategies now. When I work with a new client, I typically ask them to give me a list of 10 positive things about themselves. If they're currently going through something difficult, it's very hard for them to come up with perhaps even 5 things because they're so consumed with all the negativity and all the things that they believe about themselves based on the situation. It's important for each of us to have a list of self-affirmations. Once again, it doesn't mean you have to believe these things right now, but when you start to write out a list of what these things are about you, it could be your personality attributes, it could be your physical attributes, it could be personality traits. I mean, there are many things you can come up with, but when you can start to create a running list of these things while you're struggling in this situation, it causes your mind to shift. It causes it to tilt and to look in a different direction. It doesn't mean that you believe what you're writing down right now, but you're planting the seed for your mind to slightly shift the perception of what's happening, and you're starting to build a reservoir of positive self-validation. And that's what we need. Our situation is going to tell us the worst. And if we believe the worst, then we become the worst. And so it's vital for you to start writing these affirmations down now. For example, I am smart. I am attractive. I am funny. And then the list can go on. And remember, it doesn't mean you're going to believe these things right now. And they may seem superficial or they may seem trite. But the point is you are starting to see these things. You're starting to have these things in front of you. Because when you close your eyes and all you feel is that heartache, all you feel is that brokenness, you need some point of contact. And this list is very good for that. And if you're saying, James, I can't come up with anything right now. Well, then what would your loved ones say? The people who care about you? What would your friends say? What would your coworkers say? What would your family members say? Whomever these people might be, have them help you with this. This is a wonderful activity because you get to hear other people talking about you in a very positive way when you just recently heard all these negative things about you. Journaling is incredibly important. Allowing yourself to just write down what you're experiencing. Some people write it down in bullet form. Some people actually write out their thoughts. And when you write your thoughts out, you'll find so much emotion that comes out. And that's a way to kind of purge yourself of what you're experiencing. Half the time when we're going through something so difficult, we don't even realize how powerful the emotions are because sometimes we just feel so numb, or sometimes we're just so overwhelmed with all that's happening that we don't even know what we're feeling right now. So putting your energy into journaling actually helps you release a lot of this as well. I really recommend that each of you find some type of spiritual connection, whatever that might be. For me, it's God. For you, it could be something completely different. But finding that connection of getting anchored into something that's greater than yourself gives you a sense of hope, gives you a sense of belief, whether that's the collective consciousness, the universe, God, whatever those things are for you, it's important to plug into something or to a group of individuals or a group of like-minded people who can help support you during this time. You're not alone. One thing that people typically do is their identity then becomes wrapped up in the event. For example, if you were fired from your job, well, that's how you internalize it. I am someone who is fired. You are in this breakup. I am someone who is dumped. You go through a bankruptcy. I'm considered a bankrupt person. And so when we create those labels based off of the situation, it then becomes who we are. But remember, an event is an event. It's not who you are. If it becomes who you are, then you've created a new lifestyle for yourself and you'll never be able to reach beyond that. And so that's why it's so important now to start to do these things. And of course, when we go through a loss, it's not easy to say, oh, let me write down some positive self-affirmations or let me journal or let me do this. We always have to go through this grieving process, but grief is not a lifestyle. Grief and bereavement, like I've mentioned before, grief usually only lasts 3 to 6 months. Now, it doesn't mean you still don't experience the pain and all the loss, but the difference is it's not so consuming. And if you're still feeling a lot of struggle and you haven't gone to see a therapist, then I recommend that you do that. Remember, what you've gone through is not who you are. You will laugh again. You will love again. You will dance again. You will smile again. You have not yet reached your highest potential. Just because you can do these things to try and fill the void and fill the pain in your life doesn't mean that you should do these things. If you believe the lie that you're less than or you're worthless or you have no value, then that becomes a foundation of the next steps you make in your life. And unfortunately, when people have internalized it as such, then they will make poor decisions when it comes to relationships again. They will make poor decisions when it comes to the direction their life should go. One thing to remember as you move beyond this difficult time is your value. No one can decrease your value unless you yourself decrease it. Keep that in the forefront of your mind. That will help protect you from making decisions that will cause you to feel less than or to feel worthless or to put yourself in situations where you are not valued as the amazing person that you are. Your self-esteem, your self-validation, all comes from you. And as difficult as it may seem or difficult as it may feel right now, there is another side to this. You are not damaged goods. And now a quick word from my sponsor. For you, my listener, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. Many of you don't know this about me, but I'm an avid reader. So this is a great opportunity for me to be able to download any book I'd like to read, specifically if I'm walking my dog at the gym or even driving. So for you to get your free audiobook, go to www.audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. They have over 185,000 books for you to choose from. So I'm pretty confident you'll find the book you're looking for. So check it out today.
I have a great show for you today. I have the pleasure of introducing Patty Blue Hayes. She is an award-winning author of the book Wine, Sex, and Suicide, My Near-Death Divorce. She has an inspirational story of moving from pain and finding her purpose in helping people heal from heartbreak. Welcome to my show, Patty.
Thank you so much, James. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, definitely. I'm really excited for you to share your story with my listeners.
I am too. Now, it's funny because I'm not usually excited about telling such a sad and desperate story, but I think that is the value when we go through such a devastating time. It is important to share those stories because that's how we connect with one another, learn from the experiences that other people have had, and most importantly, I think for me, was not feeling alone. I felt very alone.
I'm sure you did. I mean, I think anytime anyone experiences such traumatic heartache and being heartbroken, they definitely feel alone. They feel as if they feel isolated. They feel as if no one else perhaps can even understand what they've gone through because it's so devastating.
Yes. Your whole world is just shaken upside down. And for anyone who was experiencing things like I was, which going toward, you know, the dark side of numbing out, then you bring in all that shame and self-loathing about the actions that you might be taking. For me, it was overdoing it with alcohol and then surprisingly this strange sexual compulsion kind of started as a way of dealing with the rejection by my husband. And so then you add that layer on of self-hatred and self-loathing and criticism, and you really, really can just kind of beat yourself up into, you know, a dark, abysmal mess.
Well, it takes on a whole life of its own as well.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because once that has momentum, that can just keep building in that direction. For me, I found that I desperately wanted to heal and, you know, to be like one of the amazing women I'd seen in magazines, that they have those glossy makeovers for the after picture. But my actions were very much going in line with, you know, the lower self, just that primal, like, let me get away from pain and toward pleasure. And that pleasure seeking can become very detrimental and self-harming.
It certainly can. Mm-hmm. So why don't we back up to the very beginning so people have a clearer picture of all that transpired with you?
You know, there was a root belief that I had that when I got married, it was going to be forever, because I'd seen my parents go through a divorce and I vowed, you know, that's not going to happen. And my husband and I had lived together for 10 years and then got married. So I figured, all right, we're made in the shade. This
You're
is good.
Solid,
if we could be together. Yeah. 10 years. We got this. So when the news came and it was kind of abrupt and dramatic, you know, we were on vacation. I caught him sexting and then he just said, you know, I don't want to be married anymore. And he moved out 5 days later. And really there was no communication after that. So I felt very untethered. The mistake that I made in the marriage was allowing my identity, my entire identity, to be his wife. And so when the marriage ended abruptly, I mean, I felt like I was in an amputation. I didn't know who I was without being my husband's wife.
So the loss was compounded in so many ways. I mean, not only the loss of your marriage, but the loss of your identity, the loss of so many other things. And so, of course, it's traumatic when one of those were to happen, but with all of those happening together, I can't imagine what that felt like for you.
Yeah, it felt like it was a very surreal time, and it really felt like I was in amidst a nuclear wasteland where everything that I had seen for the future, trusted from the past, and thought about the present, it just all disintegrated like at once. It just imploded and was gone. With infidelity and lying, you really can't trust the past. You wonder, well, how long has this been going on? And, sure. You know, can I even trust that this person ever really loved me? And when did that trail of lying and betrayal start? Everything was either, you know, racing back to the past, trying to pick up clues and pieces, or racing into the future. The loss also can extend, like it did for me, to extended family. My husband's family was really the family that I had connected with over the years. And we had, you know, holiday traditions for 16 years. That was gone as well. And I knew that these losses were lining up. It was just absolutely overwhelming. One of the things I did was I exiled myself to Romania for that first Christmas.
Oh my gosh.
I did not know where to put myself if I stayed in California. I don't think I would have survived, to be honest, if I hadn't made a plan to get out. So I volunteered at a orphanage in a small town called Bely Tushnad in the Carpathian Mountains in the Transylvanian region of Romania. And it was the best experience. And it's actually one of the practices that I advise people if they're going through any kind of loss or traumatic heartbreak, is to muster up the energy to get out and be of service to someone else, because someone needs you and you can feel valuable and like you're contributing. You'll be around other people who are also doing good work in the world. And even if it just distracts you from, you know, your own thoughts for a little while, there's just a huge benefit to doing that.
It also gives a purpose. It gives you a purpose for time and gives you direction on you're going to do that. And there's that rewarding component of helping people and giving back. And so your brokenness isn't in your face in that moment.
Yes. Actually, that was the intention of writing my book, The Wine, Sex, and Suicide, My Near-Death Divorce. I didn't intend on over drinking and over sexing and ending up in a psychiatric hospital. The intention was to write a book about doing volunteer service projects as a means of healing a broken heart, because that was the intention. And then all that, you know, dark underbelly stuff was going on. And I was very committed to telling the truth as I was experiencing it. So those things ended up in the story as well, because it's a journal. It was important to share the process, because I was feeling like such an alien when it came to how I was going through this whole process of separation and eventual divorce. And I was losing weight, losing hair, nauseous, vomiting, either from stress or from overdrinking, bringing home strangers, collapsing to the floor in a puddle of tears. And this was by far the most excruciating pain.
I'm sure it was. I think one of the other really difficult things is when our self-esteem, not only do we have our identity that's wrapped up in something, but if we have our own self-esteem, which is wrapped up in that loss, then we fill in the blanks with what may or happen or may not have happened, or what this person thinks about me based off of our self-esteem. And so if our self-esteem is really poor at that time, then all of a sudden we think, well, they left me because of this. They left me, and I'm making this up because I don't know, obviously know your full story, but they left me because I gained a little bit of weight, or they left me because of this or because of that. And those are things we already felt about ourselves. And so it just becomes compounded. So when we reflect on the marriage, when we reflect on the loss, then that low self-esteem then becomes our reality today. And then we engage in all those self-serving behaviors or those behaviors that are trying to numb the pain. And then, like we said earlier, then that just compounds it. And then all of a sudden, the low self-esteem we had before is even worse. Now, when you're on the floor, you know, in a puddle of tears, or you're meeting these random people, or you're overindulging in alcohol. And so it just, once again, reinforces all the negative things we feel about ourselves.
Oh, completely. I probably had strands of lower self-esteem and given away the value, who I thought I was as a human being. I saw that as a reflection, what other people thought of me, and especially my husband. When consistent messages of you're not smart enough, you're not good enough, and not that they were said that directly. Everything was just, wow, you know, I'm just not making the mark. And I took that on, not realizing that it had nothing to do with me. You know, Don Miguel Ruiz, the Four Agreements, and the one where he says, don't take anything personally. I think that was the hardest agreement for me. I would read that over and over and over. Like, what do you mean? We have to take things personally because they're about us. No, it's about, it's about the other person.
Yeah, exactly. It's what they're going through. Okay. So you found after your year in Romania, for your time in Romania, what was the next steps for you for your healing?
When I got back home, things were proceeding with the divorce and the reality, the enormity, the darkness of it, all got to be a little too much. And there was one night where I just realized that the future really was gone with this man and the family that I had loved and thought that there was going to be this, you know, forever future, till death did we part. And I tried to end my life by some miracle of God. I did not die. And that's pretty much the bottom of the bottom. And being in a psychiatric hospital for a few days was probably the start of really climbing back out of that abysmal despair. And in the psychiatric hospital, interestingly enough, I didn't feel alone. I finally felt like I had other people who felt just like I did. And I'd look around the room and we'd all share our stories and we gave each other compassion and understanding. And it was very enlightening, because I think if most of us took on that attitude throughout our day when we're encountering different people, we are all the same.
We are.
I don't know if you're probably familiar with Pema Chodron. Your listeners may have heard of her. She's a Tibetan Buddhist nun, and she has a practice that I love called Just Like Me, where when we are out in the world, in traffic or in a line at a grocery store, look into other people's eyes and say, just like me, that person has had disappointments. Just like me, that person wants to feel loved. Just like me, that person has known despair. And it humanizes us. It unites us. We all have that same capacity for despair, joy, hope, sadness. We all have that range of emotional experience.
Patty, I think that's absolutely beautiful. And I think it speaks to so many things because, for example, lifeology, the whole concept of lifeology is we all have a story. We all have a similar life. It doesn't mean it's expressed the same way, but the emotions that we experience, it all unites us in a very common bond that we all experience, like you said, that devastation, that happiness, that joy, that grief. And I think that's absolutely wonderful for us, each of us, to remind ourselves that, yes, we're all human. We all have such a common bond together. So I think that's amazing that you were able to realize that in your darkest time, but it was something that was very powerful for you. So, Patty, you found yourself surrounded by these people. Everyone was connected. And then what happened after that?
Coming back home after the release from the hospital was really the point of taking those tiny, tiny, tiny little baby steps and putting all the little pieces together. And mine was a really bumpy path because I was starting to do good things, healthier things, making healthier choices. But then I was also still kind of giving into numbing out from the pain. And eventually I enrolled in a life coaching class and started to learn about skills and tools and how powerful the mind is and getting in touch with emotion. So I was learning about these things. I wasn't mastering them by any means because I had a long way to go toward really healing. Yeah,
but you acted as if, in a sense of, I'm not yet there, but I want to be.
Yeah, and I kind of did the healing from heartbreak cha-cha. You know, I was taking 3 steps forward and 4 steps back, and then 5 steps forward, 3 steps back. But at least I was making forward momentum. You know, for anyone who is going through any kind of trauma, loss, heartbreak, job loss, where they're just kind of giving into those numbing behaviors, the last thing we should do is beat ourselves up for it. You know, focus on the positive steps that we're taking. We can start over like in a minute. We can just make a decision. Okay, no, this minute is going to be different than the last minute. And sometimes I had to break it down like that. Sometimes I had to just repeat to myself, this too shall pass, this too shall pass, this too shall pass. And it was incremental, little baby steps forward, building myself up. One of the most important things I think I learned all about the emotions and embracing them and allowing yourself to feel them. And to be honest, it really wasn't until just this past year where I realized that I had a lot of anger that I had repressed because being a woman, anger is not ladylike, anger is not healthy. And I'd seen my mom hold on to anger and bitterness, and I didn't want to become like she did. So instead of allowing myself to feel it, express it, and release it, which is what I advise people to do, I buried it and I stuffed it. And I wanted to go immediately to acceptance and this is my path in life. I just have to accept that this is what happened and I'm going to be the bigger person and just move on. But anger has a place.
It
when someone does something that goes against our values and what we hold dear, we have a right to be angry.
Yes.
And I realize it's important to feel it, not hold on to it. We don't want to grip onto it, and we need to feel it, express it, and release it. So I'm working on that now, you know, kind of digging up some of that repressed anger, feeling it, going for a walk on a trail, throwing rocks. I'm getting much better aim and releasing it.
Yeah. But I think when anger is used appropriately, it's used to validate the pain and the behaviors that the other person perhaps inflicted on us. It validates the indignation of how dare they treat me in a way
that would cause me to feel less than, or would to minimize who I am as a human being, minimize who I am or what I have to offer. And I think when it's really put in that perspective of validating you as a person, it's so therapeutic. It's so powerful because it reinforces you have just as much right to be loved. You have just as much right to have a purpose and a plan for your life.
Yes, that is tremendous. And I've found for myself, having, you know, just kind of gone through this exploration, that sadness was kind of overlaying this suppressed anger. Mm-hmm. So sadness was kind of the go-to emotion when really, like, underneath it was some anger.
I like to really teach anger, or when I talk about anger, I like to kind of express it as a form of energy. Anger is the energy we use to pull us out of a slump. It pulls us, it takes our environment and it moves it in the direction where we want it to go. The choice is how we express that anger determines if it's considered a healthy emotion or a healthy expression or unhealthy expression. So when we think of anger as a catalyst for movement, it kind of puts a different spin on it because it allows for us to say, I'm going to use this anger appropriately, and I'm going to do something with it. It's going to move me as far as if we feel the indignation of how dare they treat me in this type of way. It causes us to change our environment. It's just, what do you do with that change? How do you make it a healthy change?
Anger is actually empowering. You know, if you think about it, being in despair and sadness is powerless.
It certainly is.
So
it's a passive expression.
Exactly. And so at least moving up to anger is like, okay, well, that's empowering. You're expressing something strong. And like you said, we don't want to take it out on road rage like a lot of people do or other people, but certainly throwing rocks on a trail and kickboxing or gardening or working out, some kind of, you know, physical expression to release it energetically from the body, like you were saying, how it's just this energy is a healthy way. And then I also like to cap that experience of expressing the anger then with kind of a softer releasing, you know, maybe saying a mantra, bringing in a little bit of the peaceful reflection, opening up my arms, just lifting them up to the sky. I release and let go, you know, something to really signify the release and the completion of the expression of anger.
Because in order to fill up that space with something, obviously we have to let something go. We can look at the release of anger in kind of a chemical way. It causes certain chemicals to be released in our body, the energy within us to be expressed. And so with that, we do have to fill it up with something different. And so to practice ways in which to refill yourself up with either refreshment or with peace, with tranquility, whatever that might be, is one of the most important things. Because if we don't fill that space up with something else, then something negative could take its place. There can be a continual version of perhaps negative behaviors we engage in or negative self-perception. And so it's so important to remind ourselves, I need to fill it up with something that is healthy for me, something that causes me to transcend to the next level of my life, whatever that might be.
Yeah, very good. Very good reminder.
So let's talk a little bit more about your book before we start to wrap up. The synopsis of your book is what?
The synopsis of the book would really be, it's a chronicle of the manic nights and desperate days of going through this journey of heartbreak and to finding the glimmer of hope. It's a raw, kind of gritty journal format. So it's actually a journal of the process. It's not a memoir where it's looking back with hindsight and wisdom. You're kind of in the trenches with me. You know, it was extremely vulnerable to publish. And of course, I had a huge amount of fear doing that. But oddly enough, I knew when I was 11 years old that I wanted to write a book specifically that would help adults.
Wow.
I think because at that time in my life, my parents, you know, were going through their divorce and there were some family issues. And I was exposed to more adult things than maybe a lot of kids my age. And I think it's very interesting that that desire then became fulfilled. I feel like it really was my soul's purpose to be writing and sharing. Would I have wanted this experience to have this book be born? No. But that's what it took to have that desire that I had to come out into the world. And I am hearing from people that it's helped them look back in experiences that they've had in their own life. One woman wrote, you know, where was this book 20 years ago when I was experiencing these same things and felt so alone? So that's exactly the purpose that I wanted, so that people who might be going through the same thing that I was going through would not feel alone.
You know, one of the things I have a very strong faith in God. And for me, in hearing this, my take on that is the purposes that that have been dropped into our hearts from a little child will always be fulfilled. And we may have this circuitous life, which brings us totally different from the direction that our purpose was originally intended, but it somehow always comes out in the end. And so you may not have known that this would be the type of book that you'd write, but that purpose that was instilled in you as a 11-year-old girl has been realized and has been fulfilled. And I can only imagine, obviously, like you said, how many people it's helping, but even it gives you now a new identity. It gives you a new foundation for perhaps, I know you're writing an upcoming book as well, but you have all these additional things and it's opened up your world and it's helped you re-identify who you are. You're an author. You're many, many other things. And I just love hearing how your purpose is now continually being fulfilled through this heartache, through this traumatic event, but it's bringing you to a place of growth, of development, of really achieving the purpose and one of the reasons why you are here.
Yes, it is fascinating when I look back to that time and think, wow, you know, this was the path that had to unfold before me in order for me to kind of fill that purpose. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to, you know, be a writer. I've always written. This was kind of the catalyst that pushed me forward onto that path in a stronger way. And now, you know, I have so many ideas about other books to write to help people getting through this process.
Yes.
The other book that I wrote was My Heart is Broken, Now What? And that offers the 12 practices that I found to be the most helpful in getting through heartbreak. So it's kind of a condensed version of the things that I picked up along the bumpy path.
Patty, that is absolutely wonderful. I'm so inspired and I'm so proud of you for being able to find your purpose through this devastating time. Everybody has a choice. And it doesn't mean that choice comes easy or it comes right away. But as our life continues to unfold, just like you said, minute by minute, second by second, we can determine what we're going to do, what we're going to assimilate into our life, the direction we're going to go. Like we said, for 1 minute, we may go one direction, and then the next minute, we may go another direction. But mm-hmm. you were able to find your purpose. And I, like I said, I'm just so proud of you for that. I think that bespeaks to your own personal integrity. It bespeaks to your own desire to change the world and all the other people along your journey that you've helped and that have also helped you.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to me. Thank you. You know, one thought came up that I wanted to share with your listeners because
sure.
this was a powerful reframing. I was asking why, right? I wanted answers. Why, mm-hmm. why did he do this? Why did he stop loving me? Why was he, you know, why? And someone encouraged me to ask what can I learn from this? And that's
yes.
empowering. I didn't like to admit that asking why really is kind of like from this powerless victim mentality.
It certainly is, yes.
But asking what can I learn from this? Okay, it happened. I can't change it. What can I do from this moment? What can I learn from this? And sometimes we don't know what we can learn from it in the moment. We need a little bit of perspective. We need to get past the experience to then have a little bit of wisdom and say, okay, oh, okay, I see I can learn this. I can learn to create healthy boundaries for myself.
Yes.
I can learn to say no to people when they're asking of me everything and I'm always giving. I can start loving myself. I can start being kind to myself. So all those lessons along the way come from just changing that question from why to what.
Oh, yeah, I really like that. I think that's a really good takeaway for my listeners. So, Patty, if my listeners wanted to find more information about you, where could they find you on the internet?
I can be found at pattybluehaze.com. It's Patty with a Y, blue like the color, Hayes, Hayes.
And they can find all your books on there, and they can find all the life coaching skills that you have and all those other additional tools and techniques that you have available on your website, correct?
I sure hope so. And the books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble online.
So, Patty, I want to thank you so much for being on my show. I've been truly inspired by your story and through this heartache and pain, and you were able to find your purpose once again. And I'm confident my listeners have many wonderful takeaways themselves.
Thank you, James. I really feel that you're doing such good work in the world with your podcast
you.
And your YouTube videos. I mean, you've definitely had a positive impact on me. And also, I just have to say that you're music is extremely healing. And
oh, thank you. That's so kind.
Beautiful. Yeah, very, very beautiful. So
thank you.
And that is a healing element that people need in their lives is music.
Yes. Yes. Well, thank you so much. I'd also like to thank you, the listener, for joining with me today. Please subscribe to this podcast, either through iTunes or through whichever podcast portal you joined with me today. Also, please visit my website, jamesmillerlifeology.com. You may enroll in the Lifeology Academy I created. They're self-directed courses for successful people just like you. You may also see all the Lifeology YouTube episodes I've created. Currently, there are over 125 episodes there for you to watch. And also on my website, you may find many other tools and techniques which will help you simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. Have an amazing week, and I'll talk to you very soon.